Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of the Providence Journal's College Basketball Podcast. This is Bill Koch, a sports writer for the Journal, in our downtown studios in Providence. It's a Monday morning here at the Journal, and it's an exciting time. We have an NCAA tournament bracket, came out Sunday night. March Madness is back for the first time since 2019. It's been a long wait. It's been a difficult year, but it's going to be wonderful. I'll never be this excited to watch my brackets go up in flames. It's going to be great. And we're breaking some new ground here on the podcast in celebration. I've got both of my co-conspirators here in studio with me this morning. First, from ABC6, the sports director there, and the weekend co-host of Cordishian Coit on WEI, Nick Coit, ladies and gentlemen. Coity, what's up?
Hello, Bill. Good morning.
And from WPRI 12 in Fox Providence, Maury Hirsch Gordon, folks.
Gentlemen, great to see you in person.
You
love
too, man.
We can make this happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is outstanding. I appreciate both of you guys for making some changes to your busy schedules. You know, I understand that it's difficult being on TV and one of the beautiful people.
Don't underestimate the work you're doing, my man. Holy cow.
Coming in here with an ink-stained wretch like myself. Yeah, it's difficult. But it is the best time of the year if you are a college basketball fan. And as I said, you know, one that has been long awaited with COVID-19, with the tournament being canceled last year, unprecedented in our lifetimes. You know, I know I stayed up last night until, who knows, 4:30 this morning.
You
know,
just
you know, looking over my brackets, looking over the matchups.
Oh, you are going to be so much more prepared than we are.
Trying to search out those upsets.
We did a podcast 2 weeks ago, and I think I had to make it 8 a.m., and I was like, Bill, get to bed before 2. I know you like to stay up. You catch the West Coast games, then maybe a rerun of the Sox or something like that. But
holy cow.
Whew, 4 a.m.
Yeah, you, wow.
That does not mean that any of my picks are going to be correct, you know, and we should start with the disclaimer, since we do now have legalized sports gambling here in Rhode Island. Do not use any of our picks for your personal financial futures. Please do not come to us if you bet away the mortgage, or you know, you can't make the car payments, or you know, your kid's college fund goes down the drain. We're not taking any responsibility for that.
The better thing, the better disclaimer is, don't blame us. Okay,
that's right.
That's it. Just don't blame us. That's it. You can take our picks, sure. You want to take our advice? No, but yeah, the college fund goes down the tubes. See ya. I'm not taking the blame. Nope.
Yeah, definitely not. We're going to start with some housekeeping. A couple local items here first. We'll go to Providence. There was an announcement over the weekend, a high-profile transfer out of Providence. Greg Gant, sophomore forward, former top 75 recruit, four-star recruit from North Carolina, is leaving the Friars after 2 seasons. Played in 53 career games. He made 7 starts as a sophomore. You know, this is a situation where he had Big East offers, Power 5 offers. Providence invested a lot of time and effort in recruiting him here. And for whatever reason, the relationship just didn't work out. You know, there were times where he looked like a really good player, somebody who could help them going forward. There were other times where he looked a bit lost and maybe, you know, not as integrated into what Providence is trying to do, you know, as they might have liked. You know, so certainly the start of what we all thought, I'm sure, was going to be a busy offseason in Providence. You know, maybe something that we could have seen coming. But still, considering who Greg Gant was when he was recruited and what was expected, some jarring news for the Friars.
This is a guy that, when I think about Bill, PC not having the offseason, you know, something that I've been pointing out is just that I felt like defense could have been, you know, I think improved with a lot of different guys, and Ed would have had more time to integrate guys defensively and have them be where they needed to be and whatnot. And I think one of the guys that may have maybe stunted his growth in that regard would have been Gant, because I think a full offseason with him, he takes on a bigger role. You know, he was out there starting at points in the season. So obviously they had him in mind as an important guy, but it just didn't work out this year. Tough road, too, for him. His freshman year, loses his mom during his freshman year.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what the kid went through. So one of those scenarios where I think maybe a fresh start would be good for a young man like Greg, who seems to be a great, great kid and obviously already has a lot of interest out there in the transfer market. So that speaks to how well-regarded he is. And so, you wish him the best and hope he can find some footing somewhere else.
Yeah, how much is home calling him, right? He's a kid from the South, sure. North Carolina, I believe.
Yep.
There's a bunch of good programs down there that he could find a fit to. Former top 75 guy and had a lot of potential. I think we can agree on that. I just don't think offensively he came around enough. You know, you look at a guy like Noah Horkler, really came on strong late in the season. Jimmy Nichols, before his injury, showed flashes. You know, was consistent from the floor, could hit a couple threes and could sort of be that stretch four. And I think Gant kind of got behind them, you know, so he was kind of third in line for the a bigger three or smaller four, but hopefully this kid can find a little bit, find some traction, find a program to go down to, make an impact. I just think offensively, I just don't think the ceiling was high enough. I think defensively was good, active hands, can get out and transition and run. You saw the offensive struggles and the long stretches that they had where they couldn't score, they couldn't put stuff together. And when you have a guy like that on the floor who can't go get you a bucket, I think it's hard to get yourself out of it.
Yeah, I think there was, Coit and I obviously had the discussion last week, the postmortem about Providence. And, you know, I think someone like Gant, his physical tools, I think they might be better served in a little faster pace, a little more open system. Maybe not as much, you know, sort of half-court grinded out flex offense that Providence is running. You look at his offers coming out of prep at Trinity Christian, Virginia Tech, Oklahoma State, Florida, Louisville, Clemson, Virginia, Texas, Tennessee, Alabama. I mean, just no shortage of Power Fives. Connecticut and Xavier were also on his list. So this is a talented guy who somebody saw a lot in at some point. The coaching community was pretty unanimous on the fact that he was going to be a special player. We wish him the best moving forward, obviously, and, sure. And wonder, you know, if he will step closer to his home. I know he's already heard from North Carolina State. Host of schools within North Carolina. I know he's heard from Arkansas as well. Obviously a little bit closer to home and would be a place in the SEC. So interested to see where he lands. Interested to see what the Friars do going forward in what is going to be a transition offseason for them. Other big transfer news in the Atlantic 10 this time. This came out Monday morning. Trey Mitchell is leaving UMass, sophomore forward, first team All-Atlantic 10 after his sophomore season. He was a top 100 recruit when he pledged to the Minutemen. There's going to be a long line for him, obviously, as you would expect. A skilled big guy, average almost 19 points a game, more than 5 rebounds a game. I know we had the discussion when Jameson Battle decided he was going to leave George Washington. He was one of 3 players who is going to leave the Colonials this offseason and counting. If you're UMass, it's really difficult to see UMass contending at the top of the A-10 if you can't retain talent like that. I know he was a little bit of a package deal with assistant coach Tony Bergeron. He was his prep school coach at Woodstock Academy. I know that was part of the reason why UMass was able to land Trey Mitchell. But certainly, if you're UMass, this essentially says we're not in the class of Dayton, VCU, St. Louis. We are not going to be an annual contender like those schools if we're going to lose talent like this.
Absolutely. And this is a major one. I mean, this is the guy that when you think of UMass and what their future could be here, and when you thought of, okay, the potential that they had with Matt McCall, Trey Mitchell's first name that was on the list. So the fact that he's leaving the program, you wonder what the domino effect may be. You know, is it just Trey Mitchell, or are there other guys that are going to look at it and say, well, if Trey's not going to be here, then, you know, that's just, it's a huge domino to fall for the Minutemen. And this is a talented kid, too. This is a kid that, during his freshman season, I think everybody that follows the A-10 looked at and said, oh, okay, well, there's some serious talent here. And so he's another guy that's going to hear from a lot of different places. I'm interested to see where he goes. But for UMass, you're right, Bill. It certainly puts them a few steps back to the drawing board, if you will.
Yeah, this is a kid that can go to a Power 5 school and make an immediate impact. It felt like at times, averaging 20 points a game, he was doing it in his sleep, right? And it was a quiet 20. He could hit the occasional three, and he'd pull down 6, 7, 8 rebounds, you know, just because he was in the paint. So big, so much more athletic. So I think if he really goes to a Power 5 school and, reaches the potential that he can reach, maybe slims down a little bit, puts on some more muscle, rounds out his game, plays better competition. This is a kid you could see, a second round pick in the NBA in a couple years.
Yep. Yeah, certainly in that, maybe stretch three skilled mold, where maybe he can handle the ball a little bit, expand his range on his jump shot. Definitely has a pro body at this point. But it's indicative of how things are going to shake out in a mid-major conference like the A-10, where you're going to have some programs, if they're able to retain their players, who are going to stay at or near the top of the league, and the rest are going to fall away. Folks look at the one-time transfer, and I had someone ask me the other day, they said, so what does that mean? Are we going to have to recruit our players every single year? And I thought about it for a few days and thought about it again this morning. And my response to that at this point is essentially, when you're in a relationship with a significant other, aren't you recruiting them every day from a standpoint of, aren't you trying to be the best that you can be, in terms of the way you treat them, the way you respect them, the way you think about them, the way you care for them, the way you show them that you actually care? And I don't think it's any different with coaches and players. Can you show them a path towards the NCAA tournament, towards success, towards their pro futures? If that's not the case, then I would understand if someone like Trey Mitchell would look at your program and say, I can do better than this. I'm going to advance myself better in some other place. Commitment is what it is. It is a two-way street. If you're going to reach somebody who can give you a little more, you're only as faithful as your options.
You know what that reference was? That was a Mark Dondero right there.
Oh, was it?
Oh, yeah. He likes to bring in the real-life scenarios things.
Wow.
You know, when you're with your significant other, okay?
Wow.
And you're with this person, and things are good, and, that's what that just reminded me of.
People can't see us, but you got to get the hands.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Too.
The move and everything, all the energy. And
Well, Dondero's wife, Jen, is lovely, so mm-hmm. I would imagine that Mark is a practitioner of...
great recruiter.
This sort of everyday recruiting.
Yeah,
He's done well, so good for him. So interested to see where Trey Mitchell will land in what is sure to be a busy transfer offseason in college basketball. All right, gents, now to the main event.
Let's do it.
The NCAA tournament starting Thursday, 5:10 p.m., Mount St. Mary's and Texas Southern will get us going at the first four. Will be played at Assembly Hall on the campus of Indiana University, which is just so cool. This can't be a traditional NCAA tournament, obviously. They're going to try and bubble these teams as best they can. But to have this staged in Indianapolis, to use Assembly Hall and Hinkle Fieldhouse and, some of the places that we're going to see on TV over the next few weeks is just so cool. Locate True TV on your cable shuffles right now. That first game will be on True TV. TBS will broadcast the others.
Are either of you guys YouTube TV guys?
Maury?
Big YouTube TV guy,
Is True TV on it? I haven't looked
that's
yet.
That's a great question. I don't know.
Oh,
I
boy.
Can't say I watch True TV outside of March Madness.
Right.
So I don't know.
Yeah, we're going to have to
this
we're
is,
have
this
to
is a
that.
Public service, folks.
Yes.
Find True TV, whether
yep.
you have YouTube TV, Verizon, Cox.
Yep.
Locate it before Thursday. We've given you a 3-day lead time.
It's important.
We'll be Mount St. Mary's and Texas Southern kicking us off. Two games of local interest, which folks should be looking at on Friday. Colgate and Arkansas, 12:45 on True TV. Again, locate True TV, folks. Villanova and Winthrop, 9:57 on TNT. That's actually the final game of Friday. Colgate, Arkansas will feature Keegan Records, the former South Kingstown and St. Andrews star. The Raiders storm their way to the Patriot League title in impressive fashion. Could find themselves a somewhat trendy 14-3 upset pick over Arkansas. I know some people will want to make that leap. And then Villanova and Winthrop, obviously featuring Cole Swider, the Portsmouth native, also a St. Andrews alum. Villanova playing against the Eagles after earning their latest at-large berth. That is a 5-12 game, and another game where I think a lot of folks will be looking for an upset. Cole Swider obviously is in the midst of a great career with Villanova, a very successful career with the Wildcats. So, those are our two links to March Madness. None of our men's teams were fortunate enough to hear their names called, but it's still nice to have a little bit of a rooting interest, isn't it, guys?
It is. I'll give you a few more, too. Obviously, Dan Hurley, UConn.
We'll get to that when we break down the East
region.
Sure,
that's another connection. And I'm interested. I know it's a 2 versus 15, so we'll see. It's a long shot, but guys, having Rick Pitino back in the bracket is interesting.
Big time.
It's huge. He had a line last night, something along the lines of Billy Donovan's not walking through that door, which was a nice little reference to his Celtics days. And
let's not remember those.
And I there was another one this morning too. Deb Weinrich, who we all know is a PR guru and
sure, yeah.
Somebody we work with, and she does a great job. She pointed out Clemson has an assistant coach on their staff.
Antonio Reynolds Dean.
So a few other little connections there if you're interested.
Yeah, they'll be out there as we find over the next few weeks. Just some general notes for your brackets. And we're not saying that you should pick games this way, but just some trends over the last few years. In 9 of the last 10 Final Fours, there's been a team seeded 5 or lower. There's been one double-digit seed that has reached the Sweet 16 every year since 2008.
Wow.
Your 6-11 games since 2013, 14-14, split between the 6 and the 11. Your 5 seeds swept in 2015 and 2018. But 3-12 seeds won in 2019, the last time that happened. The 5-12 is generally a very popular upset. 7-10 games, the 7s are 99-65 in the last 164, I think.
Yep.
Wow.
There you go.
Look at me doing math on the floor.
Oh, boy.
so just some statistical trends to think about as you go into this. And the last major one for me, and this has to do with who you're going to pick for your national champion. Since KenPom came online, that was for the 2001-02 season, the worst KenPom defense to win the title finished 18th. That was North Carolina in 2008-09. North Carolina had the number one offense that year. They also had 5 future pros: Tyler Hansbrough, Wayne Ellington, Ty Lawson, Danny Green, Ed Davis. So if you're going to err on one side or the other, generally in your brackets, you should err on the defensive side, because that's going to travel through 5 or 6 games and ultimately get you paid. Guys, I would start off before we go into region by region with just general thoughts as the brackets popped up. Anything jump off the screen at you in terms of teams that were left out, teams that were overseeded, higher seeds that might have gotten a brutal draw in their respective regions? Anything like that? Did you have any visceral reactions last night when the brackets came on your screen?
I had a couple. I think the chair of the committee is the Kentucky AD.
Mitch Barnhart, yeah.
And leaving off Louisville, I think was not a coincidence.
Wow.
That they were the first team out. Maybe
big controversy in Kentucky this morning.
In spite of Wichita State, in spite of Drake. I mean, I grew up in Philadelphia. My dad grew up in Syracuse. I lean Power 5 schools over the mid-major. So I think that was interesting. Another one I saw, Georgia Tech at a 9. You get to the ACC championship game. You finish top 4 in the league. I know the league wasn't as top heavy as it's been in years past. I thought that was one that was a little bit underseeded, in my opinion. 2 other things, though, for me when I look at it, I know back to kind of Bill's stats and everything about who you should take and different records for different seeds. For me, I have 2 things. One is one bracket. Enter as many pools as you want, but the sheet of integrity, the bracket of integrity, you do well 1 year or you don't do well, and then you forget about it, you move on to the next year.
I'm with you on that.
Don't come at me with, I submitted 15 brackets.
I'm with you on that.
And my 14th one labeled Mari Hirsch Gordon, you know, 14, that one really popped because I had the 12 seed that went to the Elite Eight. Pick one bracket, rely on, you know, a couple upsets, and then and hopefully those picks, you know, come about and you win an office pool or two. But if you don't have a good year, then chalk it up to that. My one other big thing is when you're making your picks, we all want to get like the 12-5 right. We want to get the 14 over the 3 correct. In my opinion, if you can get the most final four teams right, that's how you're going to win. Because
right.
those are the teams that are going to collect you the amount of points the whole way through. So if you can get 3 or even 4 teams in your final four, you're going to be collecting a lot of money come the first week in April.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I tend to be the guy that looks at the upsets early and say, ooh, that's a good one, or that's good, or that's good. And then I look, oh, man, maybe I shouldn't have put, you know, this team and that team in the Final Four and the Elite Eight or whatnot. I tend to pick upsets early, and then my bracket kind of, you know, tailors down. I would say, too, with brackets, my general thoughts from, you know, year in, year out, and this is tough to say because Bill was up till 4 a.m., but
it's okay.
I think the less you know, the better.
No, I agree.
I think the
no
less
doubt.
You know, when you know too much, you start putting all four number one seeds in the Final Four because the three of us have watched a lot of college basketball this year. We know what these teams are. We know that logic says, well, Baylor and Gonzaga and all these great teams should be there. But this is why every year my mother will fill out a bracket and say, well, I'm going to pick Oregon because I like ducks. You know, and it's like, that's what happens.
Yeah.
Love you, Mom. But that's what happens. She'll pick something because she doesn't watch any college basketball at all this year.
No.
And her bracket usually looks better than mine. Why? We know too much. So
yeah.
Don't overstudy is what I'm saying. I know I'm saying that to the guy that was up till 4 a.m. But don't overstudy because when you do, but I like to see Bill has good study habits there with the trends and whatnot. That's good. When you start breaking down matchups and everything, you know, matchups tell you what it should be on paper, but, you know, you don't know if UC Santa Barbara's going to make it to the Elite Eight. Like, that's, you know. It could happen. We'll just watch it and we'll say, how the heck did that happen? But it does. That's the beauty of March.
Now,
so that's my piece of advice.
This is why I started the podcast with the disclaimer. Please do not please do not put your financial futures behind us.
Right.
Because we can try to give you a guide. We can try to give you food for thought. But that does not mean that the three of us will be winners in our respective pools.
Sure.
You know, it's just it's an educated guess. There's a reason why it's, you know, what is it, like 1 in 5 billion that you can pick a perfect bracket? It's some insane.
It'll never silly.
Happen. Number. No. I agree with you. I think it's just about impossible.
Yeah.
I didn't think a 16 would ever beat a 1. Okay, it happened.
Oh, were
once.
We? Quite. We were in Pittsburgh for that, weren't we?
That was a beautiful night.
UMBC in Virginia?
Beautiful night. We
it
were
was.
There in Pittsburgh at that country bar near Heinz Field.
Oh,
yes.
Nice. You guys could watch it.
Oh, it was great.
Sweet.
So we had done, I think, did Rhodey play that day? I think they won that day.
They either won that day or that was the day off. It was that might have been the day off in between. The day after they beat Oklahoma.
But the UMBC game was a late game.
It was a late game.
Yeah.
It was like an 8:30-ish type tip.
I want to say they beat Oklahoma that day, and then we went out.
Okay.
I think that's what happened.
Rhodey had the first game.
Yeah.
They tipped at 12:15.
It was, yep, okay. So I think that makes sense.
It was the lead game, I think, maybe on CBS.
But we were there with all of the Rhodey fans and the Rhodey faithful, and we're all having a nice night. And it was just so funny that everything just sort of stopped when everybody looked up at the TV, looked at the time on the clock ticking away, and we said, oh, my gosh, this is going to happen. And everybody realized what Virginia is in their style and what UMBC was doing. And then the whole bar, just everybody clapped. It was a round of applause when it got pulled off.
It was
awesome.
It was right about the under 12 timeout. UMBC hit a couple threes, and they pushed it out into double digits. And I remember saying to you or to somebody else, I said, hey, Virginia's pace being what it is, I think they were 353 in the country, which was last.
Yeah.
Virginia doesn't know how to go quick, to fast break. You know, just open it up and shoot a bunch of threes. If this gets out any further, they could be done, just based on who they are and style of play. And sure enough, UMBC with a shocker for the ages. Now, Virginia with the ultimate rebound the next year, winning the national championship. You know, full credit to Tony Bennett for being able to, you know, rise from the ashes like that. But it was an incredible night.
That was great.
You know, we would say do not pick any 16s, please, in your bracket. if that happens, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
That's a once-in-a-lifetime thing, literally.
Yeah.
And also root for those upsets, too, right?
Yeah.
Like, even if you have a 2-seed going to the Final Four, but the 2-seed's on the ropes in the first round, root for that 15-seed. I'd rather see an upset in March and a Cinderella story than be right about my bracket.
Yeah.
That, at the end of the day, throw your bracket out and you know, watch a Florida Gulf Coast make a run, or watch a Lehigh pick off, you know, a top team like Duke we saw, you know, more than 10 years ago now, which is crazy. So, root for upsets. Root for upsets.
Yep.
Wow. Some breaking news on the podcast I'm seeing across Twitter. Archie Miller has been fired at Indiana.
Wow.
That is a big-time job opening. Indiana obviously is not in the field. Archie Miller, the former Dayton coach, has an Elite Eight on his resume. He was an upset guy in that given year. So,
how many years was he there?
4 or 5.
Yeah, it wasn't too long.
$10 million buyout, I think.
Ooh.
But when you're Indiana and you don't make the NCAAs for 4 or 5 years,
yeah,
considering who you are, the league you're in, what you spend, you can make a decision to fire the coach that way.
And you're watching Illinois get a 1 seed, and yeah.
With Brad Underwood just lapping the field.
Yep.
Not good.
Yep.
Not good.
Wow.
So Archie Miller out. He will be a hot candidate stepping down, I would imagine, into a mid-major.
Absolutely.
You know, some sort of fringy, you know, job like he had at Dayton, which can perform like a power program, you know, because he certainly got it done with the Flyers. That's big news. the fact that he is not in this field, Indiana is not in this field, when I think 9 Big Ten teams made it. I think they were the winner on Selection Sunday. You know, it's speaks to reason why he is out. We will start with the number one overall seed in the West region. That's Gonzaga. Gonzaga looking to go undefeated. They'd be the first team since Indiana in 1976 to finish that off. There's only been one team since then who has made it to the title game undefeated. That was Indiana State in 1979. They had a guy you might have heard of named Larry Bird. you know, Gonzaga guys, I will say I have them as my national champion. I know a lot of people are going to have that as well. I just think that this is the time. I think this is the team. You know, I look at their individual talent, their overall skill level, you know, their statistical profile. I just think they're outstanding. They've played some really good teams this year. They've tested themselves and won a lot of those games impressively. You know, and I think it was really good that they got pushed by BYU in the West Coast Conference Final. I think that was really important. Mark Few said afterwards that that was a game that we really needed. You know, so that is my national champ. Don't know if you guys agree. We did not confer before we did this, but I just think Gonzaga is going to be a really hard out, and I have them winning the whole thing.
Ultimately, of all the bracketing I did a rough draft, and I wanted to go through it again today and see where I landed here. But ultimately, my national champion was Gonzaga. I did. It's tough to. I really like some of the upper tier teams. I told Bill over the weekend, I thoroughly enjoyed watching Illinois. I think they are a really great squad. I had them, and I'll probably have them again here in my national championship game. I like the IO, you know.
I
like Coburn.
Yep.
The supporting cast is what impressed me in that Big Ten final with Ohio State, because they were able to grind out a big win like that in the toughest conference this year, it turns out, in the country. So, there's some good I like that Ohio State team, and I love the way that they responded. Washington was a heck of a player in that game. I like Alabama. I think they've come a long way. You can't count out Iowa and Luka Garza. Like, I'm going through all these teams. But ultimately, Gonzaga stacked. They've got a squad.
Yeah.
They've got, what, 23 double-digit wins of their 26? Something silly like that. It is. And the fact that they did get pushed, you're right, Bill, by BYU, you can tell that Mark Few really respects that squad. So ultimately, I landed on Gonzaga because I think this is the time. The one thing that's missing for Mark Few in that program is a national title.
Yeah, I think when you look at it, when Gonzaga's at their best, they're head and shoulders above everybody else, even Michigan at their best, Illinois at their best. And I think that's super rare. We haven't gone into an NCAA tournament with this much of a favorite, at least in my lifetime. And you know, this team has been just super impressive. You can't even have the argument of, oh, they play in the West Coast Conference this year because they've ripped the top competition that they've seen outside of their conference. So I have Gonzaga as my national champion pretty easily as well.
So what we've just done, folks, is we've guaranteed that Gonzaga will not win the national title because the three of us all picked them. You know, to Maury's point, Gonzaga started the year beating Kansas, Auburn, West Virginia, and Iowa on a neutral floor. You know, just coming right out of the blocks and you're beating four top 65 teams, you know, beating BYU three times. BYU is a top 25 team. They also beat Virginia by 23. You're just talking about a team that's an absolute wagon. Jalen Suggs will be a top five pick, and he's not even the best player on his team. That's probably Drew Timmy this year. Corey Kispert, another star there. Joel Ayayi, another guy who can sort of do a little bit of everything. So Gonzaga, my clear favorite. We'll dig into the West region a little bit. Oklahoma and Missouri. Two teams who've struggled coming in. Oklahoma's lost 5 of 6. Before that, they had won 8 of 9, beating Kansas, Texas, Alabama, West Virginia. Really good run there. Missouri's only 3 and 6 in their last 9, but one of the oldest teams in the field. They're 11th in terms of experience. Flip a coin with the 8-9 game. Pretty certain. I didn't really have a great feeling about this one either way. I ended up going with Missouri, but I have no idea.
Boomer Sooner.
Same here, Oklahoma.
Okay. I don't mind being on an island.
No, that's okay. That's good. It's a coin flip.
Next game, 5-12, UC Santa Barbara against Creighton. Creighton, a team that the three of us know well, obviously, watching in the Big East. Team that made it to the Big East final and just capitulated against Georgetown. Really a stunning whipping that they took in that one. But UC Santa Barbara, for me, they're champions of the Big West. They haven't played a top 100 KenPom team all year. So for me, a big step up in class for those guys. When I think about Creighton, and I think that Creighton is the type of team that if you haven't played them, if you're not familiar with how to defend them, if you don't run them off the three-point line, they can score on you. I think Creighton survives here. I do think they will get pushed. I don't necessarily think they're playing great basketball at the end of the year, but I think that limiting of exposure to top quality competition hurts UC Santa Barbara in this game.
I've gone back and forth on this one because I look at it, and you're right. After watching the Big East championship game and knowing how sort of hot and cold Creighton can be, when they're really good, when they put it together, they are a really good squad. But when they don't, it gets ugly. And UC Santa Barbara with McLaughlin, they have a good player that if he has a great day, can they pull off the upset? Absolutely. And if Creighton has one of those off days, can that happen? Absolutely. But I think ultimately I think the good Creighton shows up, and I do think they win this game in advance.
Yeah, an older team. I believe in Doug McDermott. I think he's a phenomenal coach. They've got some great pieces. Mahoney and Jefferson, I think, are so interchangeable at a lot of different spots. They can play a lot of different spots offensively, guard defensively. So I think it's Creighton. It's crazy to say. I mean, we'll go through the other 5s and 12s as we go through the regions. Sometimes picking a 5 feels like picking the upset because so many people pick 12s and everyone's like, oh, that's where you can target an upset. And especially with how Creighton's coming off of the Big East championship game. But I think I got to go Creighton. Yeah.
And in fact, sometimes if you look in the Vegas books, the 5 will be the betting dog. Slim, 1 or 2 points, but it just goes to show that you know, there is very little separation when you get that far down into the seed lines. You know, next game, Virginia against Ohio, and here is where we need to go back to the storyline that has really covered college basketball the last two seasons, and that is COVID-19. Virginia is not traveling to the NCAA tournament until Friday. They will not practice until Thursday. Their players are in quarantine after a positive test that forced them to pull out of the ACC tournament. You know, I'm really interested to see if they have any sort of legs against Ohio, because the Bobcats are pretty good. They've won 9 out of the last 10. 4 of those are top 100 wins, according to KenPom. It's a top 30 offense. They're 11th in two-point shooting. They assist on 60% of their field goals. And they have a guard named Jason Preston, who could be a breakout star in this tournament if Ohio makes some kind of run. He's 10th nationally in assist percentage. This is his second straight year in the top 10, and he shoots 40% from three. The type of lead guard at 6'4", who can be a problem for opposing teams. I actually have Ohio springing the upset here. I don't like the fact that Virginia is essentially going to be inactive. I think all three of us saw what happened to Bryant when they played Mount St. Mary's in the Northeast Conference Championship game, specifically what happened to Michael Green III and Chris Childs. It is very difficult to take a week off at this level, come out and play with any sort of sharpness. And Virginia being who they are, deliberate, execution-based, I think it's really going to be difficult for them to get their legs here, and I think Ohio has a chance to spring an upset here.
They have a chance, absolutely, for all the points you just made. This is one of those where I'm going to be staring at my bracket. I'm going to be trying to listen to the updates. And until I have to lock that thing in, and I know who's playing for Virginia and who's not, that's one of those where I look at it and I say, I'm going to wait. I think for now, I will go on Bill's side and say Ohio, but I reserve the right to change that until it is locked in.
Noon on Friday.
Yep.
So I'm actually going to take UVA, but I think it's going to be a great game. I think the COVID pause definitely plays a role for the Cavaliers. However, the reason why I picked Virginia is only because I think I rely on Tony Bennett. I rely on good guards in the tournament. So Kia Clark is phenomenal, in my opinion. And then I actually have Creighton to my Sweet 16 because I think they'll have a better chance against Ohio in the second game. So as much as I might like an upset in Ohio, I still think the better chance down the line is that Ohio ends up losing. So I'm just going to go with the favorite there. But it's easy to go with Ohio. I mean, Jason Preston, phenomenal. He could be drafted come the spring.
Yep, that's sort of long-range planning that sometimes you do have to do in your bracket. I actually have Ohio in my Sweet 16. But, you know, who knows? Who knows? That's a calculated roll.
I'm with Maury. I'm going Creighton in the Sweet 16, too.
And fair enough. It's certainly a case to be made for the Blue Jays to bounce back. The next game, USC against the winner of Wichita State and Drake. I was thrilled to see Drake make the field. They had a great regular season. You know, battled some injuries down the stretch. Their point guard, Roman Penn, has a left foot injury. Scoring wing named Tank Hemphill has a broken foot as well. He's a grad transfer from Green Bay. And so Drake, you know, quite literally limped into their conference tournament, you know, after having a really good regular season. You know, couldn't overcome Loyola Chicago and ended up firmly on the bubble. They'll play Wichita State, which is a great story. Won the American Conference in the regular season. Isaac Brown took over an absolute disaster left by Greg Marshall, who was forced into resignation. You know, there were allegations of him verbally and physically abusing his players. And all Isaac Brown did was rally a team that had transfers all over the place last offseason and win the American Conference outright, earning the number one seed there, you know, earning himself the permanent job, removing the interim tag. He's a great story. Another redemption story on that roster, Alterique Gilbert, who was at UConn.
That's right.
You know, lots of injuries there. He battled shoulder problems throughout his career, but this is a really talented guy when he was recruited. Played really well for the Shockers this year. I'm intrigued to see either team match up with USC. I think USC has major upside with Andy Enfield, who we all remember from that run with Florida Gulf Coast. You know, and obviously he's got some serious talent at USC. Evan Mobley is a one-and-done lottery pick. This is a top 30 team in offense and in defense. I actually have USC going to my Elite Eight. I think that they could be a major problem athletically, you know, just with some of the physical measurables that they have with Enfield's experience. You know, that's a little bit of a dice roll, obviously, you know, because they are a little bit young in certain spots, and their guards are not the best in the field. You know, but I'm certainly intrigued to see how USC can match up with, you know, a couple mid-majors there.
I'm with you. I like USC. I like it for the reasons you just pointed out. Enfield, Mobley, and maybe this is spite from the past, but, you know, that next matchup, the 3-14, Kansas, Eastern Washington, I take Kansas in that first game, but Kansas has burned me so many times in my brackets that Bill Self, I ain't falling for it anymore. I'm not doing it. So maybe that's, again, that's just a personal beef, but I ain't putting them in my Sweet 16. I'm putting USC through, but though, as you mentioned, I think USC has got some talent there and experience. But Kansas, I warn you, don't get them on a run. Because they burned me, they busted so many of my brackets in the past, Maury, that I ain't doing it.
I'm with you. I have USC to the Sweet 16. I think when in doubt, you see the best player on the floor, a top five, top 10 NBA pick in Mobley. And I think USC, for all the garbage that the Pac-12 gets in football and in basketball, I have some Pac-12 noise, the bottom half of this West bracket.
I like it.
You mentioned the 3-14 game a little bit there, Kansas against Eastern Washington. Kansas is another team in the field that has COVID issues. Bill Self said on Sunday night that he expects to have most, if not all, of his players available. They should be able to take care of Eastern Washington. The one drawback there, obviously, is Eastern Washington is a top 30 team nationally in pace. They're top 10 in foul shooting. If they're able to run Kansas a little bit and the Jayhawks don't have their legs after a little bit of a pause, they could give them a little bit of a push in this game. I have Kansas winning it, you know, but I would not be stunned if Eastern Washington out of the Big Sky was able to get this done.
Are you telling me I should even just not even pick them once in this bracket?
Well, if you're going to
convince me,
if you're going to be that spiteful, normally I would say don't gamble with your feelings.
Sure.
You know, but if you do want to be that spiteful, you know, you could reach for a 3-14 upset here.
Yeah, I'm not going to do it.
No, there's usually a 3-14 that's close within,
sure,
you know, a,
oh,
possession,
yeah,
or two there.
Yeah.
And it can,
well,
go either way.
Remember,
usually one of them, if you're going to pick.
Remember, a few years ago, within the first 3 hours of the tournament, Baylor and Iowa State were both out. Northwestern State and Georgia State, who had R.J. Hunter at the time, both advanced. And I know that ruined more than a few brackets in a few of my pools.
Yeah.
You know, so 3-14 is not out of the realm, you know, for folks who might look and say, well, the Eastern Washington, who are they? I haven't watched them play. You know, Kansas, whatever.
Sure.
You know, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
7-10 there, Oregon and VCU, another team that we know well, obviously, VCU playing in the A-10. They lost in the A-10 title game to St. Bonaventure. And I think Mark Schmidt and the Bonnies gave Oregon a blueprint for how to win this game. And that was to limit Bones Highland while the game was being decided. Now, I had a little bit of a debate with a follower on Twitter last night, and I wanted to get your opinions on this. Bones Highland ended up with 21 points in that game, all in the second half. The final line looks really good. What I would say is that 12 of those came in the last 8:35. St. Bonaventure had a 16-point lead already. He was 4 for 11 from the field. He had 2 assists, 5 turnovers. 3 fouls in the first half. 2 of those are offensive, which double as turnovers. While the game was being decided, in my mind, you can add the 12 points at the end, and the line looks good. But for me, I think St. Bonaventure did a good job, regardless of his scoring total. Because,
absolutely,
I think they won the game before he was able to get off.
Yeah. They had to play catch-up.
I'm with you 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was the debate?
Okay. Well, the debate was that he had 21.
Great.
And that, you know, just because of that, he actually did have a good game.
They were playing catch-up the whole time. Yeah.
I'm with you, BK.
Yeah. They were playing catch-up the whole time.
Just, okay.
Stand
watch,
by
I watched
side.
The whole game. Yeah.
Oh,
absolutely.
Right. Fine.
Good player. Bones Highland's a good player.
Really good.
Yeah.
And 21's nothing to sneeze at.
No, absolutely not.
But the game was already decided before you get the majority. Though.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
100%.
And I think that Dana Altman is very much the equal of Mark Schmidt in terms of X's and O's. I don't see the Ducks with this much time to prepare, allowing Bones Highland to get off. I think VCU's biggest issue throughout the season has been secondary scoring. I just don't see a second and a third guy who are going to be able to beat you. So I do like Oregon in that game. That might have been the 7-10 game that I felt best about, honestly.
I would agree with that.
Iowa and Grand Canyon's on the other side, the 215. All I can really tell you about Grand Canyon is they're not coached by Bryce Drew, which I didn't realize that he left Vanderbilt and had a soft landing at Grand Canyon. I can also tell you that Dwayne Russell, Fats Russell's older brother, played at Grand Canyon, graduated from there after he transferred from Northern Arizona. I don't give them much chance in this game against Iowa. I think Iowa is, offensively is going to be a little bit too much. I would be a little concerned with Iowa later on in terms of their inability to play defense. But I certainly think that Iowa has enough here to avoid the 215 upset.
Yeah, Garza's just, he's a great player, and they play in a great conference. So, competition level, I put a lot of stock into that with Iowa.
The West region, I've got Gonzaga and Ohio in the Sweet 16. I have USC and Iowa playing in the Sweet 16. Gonzaga against USC in the Elite Eight, and I have Gonzaga going to the Final Four.
I like it. I've been going back and forth on this, too, because you're right. With Iowa, competition level great, but, defense at times, I could pick Oregon there. I like USC to make at least a run to the Sweet 16. Oh, for now, again, I don't lock mine in until Friday noon. So for now, let's go Oregon. I like that. Let's go USC, Elite Eight, and then I think ultimately Gonzaga's going to the Final Four. So
yeah, so I have Oregon with the upset over Iowa. I think. Yeah, Iowa's defense is a little suspect in my mind. And there's always that 7-2, 10-2 in that second round. There's usually one of them.
Yep.
Sure.
And I'll never forget in 2015 when I think we had three of them. Wichita State over Kansas. There was an 8-1, and against NC State over Nova and Pittsburgh. And there was one other that I'm forgetting now. But there's usually that second round, especially if the 7 or the 10 is from a Power 5, used to playing top competition.
Yes.
Just be weary there. If there's a 2 seed that gets picked off, in my mind, I think this year, I think Iowa has the best chance to get picked off. So I actually have the Ducks over Iowa. So I have Gonzaga over Creighton in my Sweet 16. I don't know. I've gone back and forth now between USC and Oregon, and I'm with Coity here. My bracket's not locked in until Friday at noon, and it's Monday at noon. I guess I'm going with the Ducks. I had the Ducks written in at first. That's my gut, and then I have Gonzaga to the Final Four out of the West.
Well, generally, you should always go with your gut. That's usually the best policy. I would also say that no one's bracket is locked in until Tuesday, when all these teams certify that they actually can go to the NCAA tournament.
Great point.
There are COVID issues. You do not want to submit these too early to your pool administrator, because there still could be teams who test out, teams who have 3 or 4 players positive, teams who have players ruled out due to contact tracing. So wait as long as you can before you can submit these, because realistically, this is a tournament unlike any other that we will ever see again, let's hope. We certainly don't ever want to live through another NCAA event in the midst of a pandemic. We want fans there. We want teams healthy, players healthy. And certainly that is something to consider as we go into the end of this week. We'll go to the East region, and what I think, Maury sort of hit on this a little bit. Once you get into that second round, the 1 and 2 seeds are a little bit more endangered, and I think Michigan will find themselves potentially endangered, before they get too deep into this tournament. They're going to have a big miss. Isaiah Livers is going to be out. He has a foot injury. Senior, a shooter, a veteran player in the front court. Michigan, I think, is going to be in full-blown survival mode from the second round on, and I just think it's really difficult to ride your luck in this tournament through 4 or 5 games. I think you need you know, a good start. Maybe get pushed every once in a while, but, you know, it certainly helps to win a little easily. You know, Michigan will play the winner of Mount St. Mary's and Texas Southern. I'm sure you guys agree with this. If Bryant had managed to win the Northeast Conference, I do not think that they would have been in a play-in game. You know, I also think that they might have been able to scrape their way into, like, the bottom 15 seed.
For sure.
I agree.
No doubt.
I look at, like, a Cleveland State or, like, an Oral Roberts, like, one of those two games, and that's probably where I would have had Bryant. One of those two teams would probably go to the first four.
Yep.
That's probably where I would look. Isn't that sending Rick Pitino to the first four?
No. No, they're certainly not. They need him in the tournament. You know, speaking of coaches with NCAA trouble, we arrive at LSU St. Bonaventure. You want to talk about Black Hat against White Hat, Will Wade against Mark Schmidt. Will Wade, the former VCU coach who is now at LSU, making a strong-ass appearance in the NCAA tournament. Folks can look that up on their own time. Will Wade is a cheater. You can hear his voice on FBI tapes here, there, and everywhere. Mark Schmidt has done wonders at St. Bonaventure, sweeping the A-10 regular season and postseason titles. The first team in the conference to do that since St. Louis in 2013. You know, the Bonnies, a really interesting team going forward. They only play about six guys. Can they win with only six guys? You know, can they win a game in the round of 64? I think they're 0-3 in their last three appearances. For me, I have St. Bonaventure winning this game. I don't think LSU is very good on defense. I think Osun Osunyi is the type of big guy who can play against Power Fives. You know, LSU is certainly talented. We know they can score it. We saw that against URI last year. Offensively, they are potent. But the Rams were with them in that game. And this St. Bonaventure team is better than that URI team was. You know, so maybe a bit of a familiarity pick here, but I like St. Bonaventure in that 8-9 game.
I'm going chaos in my East bracket.
Love it.
Good.
I'm going chaos.
Good.
Michigan takes, you know, wins that first game.
Yeah.
I take St. Bonaventure, and I'm putting the Bonnies in the Sweet 16.
Look at you. There you go.
I'm putting them over Michigan. It may be a stretch, but I liked what I saw. Experienced team. I like Lofton. I like Asunyi. It's a team that we've seen enough of where maybe that's why I'm looking at it that way.
Sure.
And with Livers and the uncertain status with him for Michigan.
He's a big miss.
I think it's a huge, huge deal. So I'm going Bonnies in the Sweet 16. My Sweet 16 is the 9 seed, the 12 seed, the 3 seed, and the 7 seed.
Wow.
So that is Bonaventure, Georgetown, Texas, and the Huskies. Danny Hurley, baby.
Yeah.
That's my Sweet 16. Yeah, this region is, I think it's ripe, man. I think it is ripe.
I agree.
Last time the Huskies were in the tournament as the 7 seed in the bottom left part of the bracket, they won it all.
Bingo.
Running a little...
well, then.
Running a little...
there.
History repeating
there.
Itself.
Yeah, some information,
buddy. 7 years
yep.
ago. I don't know if it was the East region, but I remember it being in the bottom left part of the bracket.
Cause in 2014?
Beat St. Joe's, and then they beat somebody else, and they kept on winning all the way to the national championship.
Folks.
But I like Hoyt's pick of St. Bonaventure to the Sweet 16. I have Florida State beating Michigan in the Sweet 16 to go to the Elite Eight. So
I do as well.
If
nice.
You think that Michigan, a one seed, you know, is vulnerable to lose a game, then I think definitely, how about, you know, go for, you know, have some chutzpah and pick them to lose the round before. So I have Michigan, LSU. Are we going right down the bracket here? Should I
if
go
you
for
want,
first
sure.
round winners?
Yeah.
Georgetown, I like Georgetown to spring the upset.
Me too.
And then Florida State to make the run of the Elite Eight. Michigan State, I think every year other than 2019, the last time we had an NCAA tournament, there's been a team from the first four to get to the round of 32, if not make a deeper run.
I think they've won games in like 6 or 7 years in a row.
Yeah,
they're a strong pick.
Yeah, they generally.
Syracuse in 18 went to the Sweet 16. VCU obviously 10 years ago went first four to the Final Four.
Yeah,
and there's been other teams. So I like Michigan State to upset BYU, even though I think BYU is a solid team.
Yep.
Texas has some top end talent. UConn and Alabama. That's all first round games.
I'll tell you that, you know, I was disappointed when I saw Wichita State and Drake pop up on my screen. I don't like when they put two non-Power Fives against each other in the first four. I just think it's a cheap way to get rid of one of them.
I agree.
But when I saw Michigan State and UCLA pop up, I almost jumped off my couch. I loved it.
Well,
I was like, that is how you do it, selection committee. That is how you suck me into the first four.
100%. And that's why it's funny. I think there were a lot of people that were looking at it and saying, well, why isn't Syracuse going to the first four? Why, you know, because they were on the bubble and they were sort of in between uncertain.
Don't look at Maury that way. He feels attacked.
No, but I'm defending him here. Why wouldn't you want Michigan State in the first four? Why would I look, putting Syracuse there? Sure. Absolutely. That would be attractive too, but to me, putting Tom Izzo there? Oh yeah.
It's a big time.
I'll watch it. Absolutely, I'll watch it.
No question.
Yeah, because you can see that they could win that game, and then they could win another one. And then they could win another one. That's just the Spartans draw in the big bracket. They do.
They do. Colorado, Georgetown. I am intrigued by Colorado. Georgetown, to me, feels like a team that was really playing for a purpose in the Big East tournament, you know, to sort of rally behind their coach, Patrick Ewing, to honor their former coach, the late John Thompson. I don't necessarily see Georgetown being able to sustain that. Colorado is one of the oldest teams in the field, 30th in terms of age, top 30 team at both ends, offense and defensive efficiency. I think they're pretty good. Florida State I like a lot. I actually have them in the Elite Eight and go into my Final Four.
Wow.
You know, I look at a team that's they're only 2-3 in the last five, but they can really shoot it from three. They have great size up front. And I think it's time for Leonard Hamilton, who is the youngest 72 or 73-year-old guy I've ever seen in my life. whatever he's got in his breakfast, I want some because he just doesn't age.
Yep.
You know, he's been a great coach for a long time. You could argue that he's a Hall of Fame type coach. You know, and this would sort of be the headliner on his resume to get to a Final Four with Florida State, you know, who I thought was going to win the ACC championship. They ended up losing to Georgia, Georgia Tech, I'm sorry. But I really like the Seminoles. I think they're a good team. They could get pushed by UNC Greensboro in that first game. They've got some physically representative players up front. But I am a fan of Florida State. I think they get to the Final Four. You know, I'm with Maury. I like BYU. Three of their losses are to Gonzaga. Another is to USC. That's the way you go 20-6. I mean, they're top 30 in offense and defense. They start three seniors. They're going to be a really dangerous team in the bottom half of that bracket. You know, Michigan State, UCLA, Tom Izzo against Mick Cronin, two guys who won a lot.
Yeah, I shouldn't downplay Cronin being there, too. Holy cow.
You know, in his second year, getting them to the NCAA tournament, back where UCLA belongs, quite frankly. You know, that is a big-time matchup of head coaches. I lobbed a bit of a grenade into the bracket with the 3-14 game. I took Abilene Christian. And the reason for that is, you know, similar to Georgetown, Texas breaks through. Shaka Smart wins the Big 12 title. Someone who was on the ropes last year in terms of his job security until he put Texas into clear NCAA position at the end of last season. The Longhorns decided to stick with him, and they were rewarded this year. You know, 8-2 in the last 10, playing really well. They won't really think much of Abilene Christian. It's a team with a top 30 defense. They're number one in the nation in terms of turnovers forced. 26.7% of possession. They're 13th in the nation in three-point defense. They've played Texas Tech and Arkansas. So they've been exposed to elite competition. They're second on assists per field goals. 67% of their field goals come with an assist. They're also 34th in experience. So they're an old team. They have all of the sort of hallmarks that if you want to throw a Hail Mary and pick a 3-14 upset, Abilene Christian profiles as the type of team that you would take the risk on. And going by Maury's strategy, I have BYU in the Sweet 16 anyway.
Ooh.
And so I would think that if you want to try to pick up an extra point or two early on in your pools, this would be a spot where you could go for it. Go for the 3-14 game and take Abilene Christian.
Calculated.
See, and these but these are the differences in brackets and philosophies and things that you look at. Because I have Texas in the Final Four.
There it is.
I'm going with Shaka in the Final Four. These are the differences that you have.
He's been before.
There you go. Exactly.
10 years later.
The experience, I think the talent that they have there, the fact that they are peaking and they have played really, really well the last month of the season. That's why I like the Longhorns. I just think I wouldn't bet against Tom Izzo. That's why I like them over BYU. But I think when Texas wins that game, And that's the thing. You said Georgetown, yes, they were playing for a purpose. I just think that they're, again, putting it together at the right time of the year. That's why I have Georgetown in the Elite Eight. So there you go.
Wow. Look at you.
Now, I could see, though, look, if Florida State advances, that's it's a strong pick. It really is. And I kind of went back and forth on that. But, yeah, that's what I have for Elite Eight. And I have the Longhorns back to the Final Four.
See, now John Rook is going to be sending the Christmas cards to you.
Hook 'em.
And certainly not to me.
Hook 'em.
The longtime PC radio voice, proud Texas alum.
Yeah, I don't know about that pick, John.
Yeah. John is not going to be happy with me. You know, but certainly I figure, you know, why not?
But this is what we do. This is why we do this bracket. It's fun. It's fun to talk about, and it's fun to see the differences when you put them all together.
So Texas in the Final Four, that's outstanding. I do like that. I mean, I could see it.
And I'm with you on Florida State's a great one, too. I'm with you.
The bottom of the East region, this is my favorite grouping of two games together. You want to talk about storylines in this. UConn, Maryland, and Alabama, Iona. I mean, goodness, if you're a beat writer for any of these four schools, this stuff is going to write itself
awesome.
Over this week.
Yep.
It's outstanding.
Yep.
You know, UConn and Maryland, obviously the local hook there is Dan Hurley is in his third year with the Huskies, and he has them back in the NCAA tournament. They were 10 or 11-3 with James Bouknight this season. You know, he is projected as a lottery pick, so he certainly gives you a star. You know, but I'm more interested in the scandalous personal history between Dan Hurley and Mark Turgeon. And I would rather go back to the 2015 Cancun Challenge, which I was fortunate enough to attend on the Riviera Maya. You or I played Maryland in the championship game without EC Matthews. He had just gotten hurt. He was lost for the season. You or I was not who they expected to be at that point. And Maryland hammered them in the championship game, blew them out, crushed them. Dan was not in a great mood going to Mexico because obviously, you know, EC gets hurt. That's his guy.
It changed the entire
year.
Yeah.
And to watch Maryland just crush them with Melo Trimble and Diamond Stone and Jake Lehman, that was a really good team. They were number two in the country at the time.
Yeah.
There was an exchange in the handshake line after the game. Got a little bit heated between the two teams. Dan Hurley and Mark Turgeon sort of shook it off afterwards, said, you know, we're just competing, it's a championship game, whatever else. Nonsense. There was molten lava coming off both of those guys in the lobby of the Hard Rock, Riviera Maya. You know, and so I certainly think that, you know, Dan isn't the type of guy who's going to forget that sort of thing. I would imagine he's going to have the Huskies motivated and ready to go. I've said throughout the year on this podcast that I think UConn has elite upside. I have them in the Elite Eight, actually. I think they will break through, you know, very early on here with Bouknight looking to atone for what he said was one of the worst games of his career against Creighton in the Big East semifinals. He is the type of star who can drag you forward. They have the sort of front court depth that can match up going into the NCAAs, and you know that the way they defend is going to be non-negotiable. You know, so I am buying on UConn coming out of that one and making a run here.
I have them in the Sweet 16. Yeah, as I said, but I stick with Texas over them after that. But yeah, I'm with you. I think Bouknight at least wins you a couple games, gets you to the second weekend.
Yeah, I think if there's a true sleeper that could make a crazy run, I think it definitely is UConn. Deep, talented, athletic. The coach has been there, and they have that star. And they have that star in Bouknight. But I have Alabama beating them in the round of 32.
and by doing that, you have EC Matthews' high school coach Nate Oates, who is now at Alabama, who was at Buffalo previously, who swept SEC regular season and tournament titles. Oates was coaching at Buffalo under Bobby Hurley, who was hired away from URI. He was Bobby Hurley's top assistant. He was promoted when Bobby Hurley went to Arizona State. He was actually here in 2016 playing in the NCAA tournament with Buffalo. I think they lost to Miami.
I think you're right.
Game.
Yeah, Larinaga, yep.
And sitting in the first row, behind press row, was Dan Hurley and EC Matthews. They wanted to get a little flavor of the NCAA tournament, which they ultimately ended up going to the next year in 2017. Nate Oates, a great story. He was a high school coach in Michigan 10 years ago at Romulus, you know, and really has Alabama playing an entertaining style of basketball. And if they weren't going to play UConn in the sweet in the round of 32. If there was a weaker opponent there, if they end up playing Maryland, for example, I think they can take care of Maryland quite easily.
Yep.
But just the matchup there and the fact that, you know, he'd be going up against Dan, I think psychologically Hurley would have some kind of advantage. Alabama playing against Iona.
Excellent.
Folks here might know Iona's coach.
Oh, it's excellent.
A little bit. A certain gentleman named Rick Pitino, who has led his fifth program to the NCAA tournament. You know, the list includes Boston University, my alma mater.
Attaboy.
Providence, Kentucky, Louisville, and now Iona. Rick Pitino playing against Alabama 34 years after the Friars beat Alabama in the NCAA tournament on their way to a Final Four. That was a 103-82 spanking. Providence was 14 for 20 from three on that night. Billy Donovan had 26 points and 10 assists in that game. One of the best games of his college career.
Wow.
So talk about storylines here. You could have Dan Hurley against Nate Oates. You could have Dan Hurley against Rick Pitino. You know, you could have Alabama against UConn, which would be SEC power against rejuvenated Big East power. You know, certainly just I think in terms of four teams grouped together, I think that is the richest grouping of four teams in terms of storyline in the entire tournament.
I love it. I love it. I just, the East to me, there's so much to talk about. There's so much that could happen. Yeah, I'm with you. And those last two matchups, when UConn Maryland popped up and you put that piece up about Turgeon and Hurley, I was like, oh, this is what the tournament's about, man.
Yeah.
I loved it. Having Pitino back in the tournament is just, it's interesting. Yeah, this East region may be my favorite.
It could be phenomenal. I look at this and I think, like you, I've got a bunch of lower seeded teams who end up advancing deep. I have BYU and UConn playing in the Sweet 16. Michigan and Florida State on the other side, but I don't feel great about the Wolverines without Livers. Florida State and UConn in the regional final, and Florida State in the Final Four. I know, Coit, you're going with Texas.
Going with Texas.
You know, who I have out in the first round, so you could see just, you know, the variance that could exist here in the East region. Maury, where are you going?
I have the Seminoles over the Longhorns in the Elite Eight.
Nice.
Okay, so you guys both believe in Texas, which I completely understand. You know, they certainly have talent. They certainly have the coach who can get them there. Jump over to the South region. I think I might not have said this a month ago, but I think the most vulnerable one seed going into the field is Baylor. You know, and oddly enough, I look at them based on the profile that we talked about early in the podcast, the fact that defenses tend to win in March Madness. Baylor has the worst defense out of any number one seed in the field. They're only 41st nationally in defensive efficiency. They're 179 defending the three. They're 280 on the defensive glass. And so I look at that and I think, are they going to be able to get the stops? Are they going to be able to stop a team that gets hot against them? A team that's able to take care of the ball that doesn't allow them to speed them up? And I could see two of those teams as early as the second round, either North Carolina or Wisconsin. North Carolina is the number one offensive rebounding team in the nation. They could crush the Bears on the glass. Wisconsin is one of the oldest teams in the nation. You know, second in offensive turnover percentage, 22nd in experience. They haven't lost to a team outside the top 35 all year, according to KenPom. I could see Baylor going down in the round of 32. I think they're the most endangered one seed in this field. I have Wisconsin winning that second game and going to the Sweet 16. But realistically, I could see a coin flip in that first round. I think that's the best 8-9 game by far. You know, the two teams with the most upside in terms of being able to make a deep run out of that 8-9 slot by far.
I'm just going through my picks again. Like I said, I went over some of them last night. I agree with you. I think Baylor is vulnerable, but I still think they're uber-talented. And so I still have them going to the Elite Eight. I do. I think UNC is, you know, I love Roy Williams. I have them winning that 8-9 game.
Dadgummit!
Well, it could be, you know, again, 8-9 coin flip. But they've been inconsistent. They've been good all year, and then they've had off nights. I think the the funny thing is, I think the trendy pick in this bracket, and I saw somebody throw up a meme of like a bunch of people running towards something. The trendy 5-12 upset pick is Winthrop over Villanova.
Sure.
In that 5-12 matchup. I'm not falling for it. I'm not doing it. I know Colin Gillespie is a huge part of what Villanova does, and I know that that is an important missing piece. However, Jay Wright is a heck of a coach. Mm-hmm. They still have a heck of a team with Robinson Earl. I still have Nova winning that game. After that, fair game. But I still have Nova winning that game in 5-12 and going up against Purdue in the next round. Though I do like the main grain there. The 4-13 matchup could be good.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sunday night when that matchup was presented, Seth Davis had Winthrop, I think, 10 seconds after they put Winthrop in there.
Easily.
Right. So, yeah, going with Nova, like I was saying earlier, and to your point, Nick, feels like the upset, picking the five there. I like Baylor. I think the one thing that I've seen from Baylor night in and night out, regardless of performance and regardless of result, is they just play hard. I mean, these dudes play hard. They bring it. Scott Drew is a hell of a coach. I think, regardless of situation, they've played a ton of great teams in the Big 12 every year. I think even if you get down 10, you get down 15 in the NCAA tournament, those tough-minded teams, teams with that mental toughness, they can, you know, come back from a big deficit. So that's why I have Baylor to my Elite Eight in the South region. I like Wisconsin a lot. I just worry about their potential offensively. I think sometimes they can get stuck in a rut. But I think an older Wisconsin team beats a younger North Carolina team. But you never know. North Carolina could make a run to the Elite Eight. They could make a run of the Final Four if they're playing well. Side note, I think the Tar Heels are phenomenal next year when they bring back a ton of their guys now, and they have a great recruiting class. So look out for the Tar Heels next year.
Probably speaks to the Jekyll and Hyde-ness of them in terms of, like, you know, their youth and, you know, the guys that they have. It's a good point.
There is one interesting gambling note to keep in mind regarding Villanova and Winthrop, and that's generally when everyone likes the underdog.
Yes.
Could be a little dangerous.
Yes. Go the other way.
Might want to go the other way and go with
the
favorite.
That's kind of the way I was thinking, too.
That's kind of – I did pick Winthrop, but I it is nagging me a little bit that everyone has Winthrop.
Everybody. Like, the whole world is running toward them.
And, you know, everyone is looking at that as a 5-12 game. There's no Colin Gillespie. He's obviously out with a left knee injury. Winthrop is 23-1. You know, they run up and down the court. They've got a guy in Chandler Vaudrin who is a triple-double threat. He plays like Lamar Odom a little bit, point forward type guy. But when everyone loves the dog, you might need to go with the fave. Winthrop will go down in my brackets, but I won't feel as good about it as maybe I did when the bracket came out on Sunday night. Purdue and North Texas is an interesting game.
Main grain.
Purdue is 23rd nationally in offense and defense in terms of efficiency. Trevion Williams is a National Player of the Year candidate. But North Texas, I mean, North Texas is an old team, 13th in experience, 350th in adjusted tempo. So they could drag Purdue into the mud, sort of impose their will on Purdue a little bit if they're able to control the game with their experience and slow Purdue down into something that's uncomfortable. When you're up by 8, it feels like 16. Those are hard games to play in the tournament. I do have Purdue winning that game, but I could certainly see how, if North Texas is able to get that game played at their pace, that they could make things interesting. The next game, I think Texas Tech and Utah State, this is the hard hat game for me. You know, you could see guys out there in football pads in this game. These are two of the most physical, most nasty teams that you're going to see in this tournament. Texas Tech is, they're like a root canal playing against them. They are just so brutal defensively. They finished 24th this year in defense. That's their worst finish in the last 4 years. They were 4th, 1st, 9th, 21st. Chris Beard is just an excellent coach.
Really good coach.
At that end of the floor. Utah State is one of the toughest teams in the paint in the nation. They're 8th in defense, 16th in offensive rebounding, 5th in defensive rebounding, 4th in two-point defense, 7th in block percentage. Good luck getting anything at the rim against these guys. This game could be in the 50s. Both teams could be battered and bruised and have no chance to win their next game. I mean, this is going to look like it's going to be an absolute rock fight between these two teams. Not for the faint of heart. Keep your kids away from the TV in this one. You know, I took Texas Tech in this game. I think they'll survive. I think they've played enough wars in the Big 12 where they'll be able to come out on top. But realistically, you know, if you're looking at a game where you want to teach your kids, if you're a high school coach, youth coach, you want to teach your kids to be physical, to rebound, to work, you know, blue-collar ethic, this is the one to watch throughout the entire field.
So I like this slot of four teams here with the 6-11 and the 3-14 matchup because it's such a stark contrast. As you mentioned, the 6-11 here with Texas Tech and Utah State is drag it down, great defense, just all over the boards, like you said, put on the pads. And then in contrast, the 3-14 matchup with Arkansas and Colgate, that might go 105 to 102.
Right.
Like that's what I love about this, is just such a contrast in styles. And you heard it on the selection show, and I had the same reaction when I heard Arkansas and Colgate. I was like, wow. These guys are going to put on their track shoes and they're going to be running a 5K.
Yeah.
Like it is, oh my goodness, it's going to be great. So 6-11, I could see it going either way. Texas Tech is battle tested. I went with Utah State. I gave them the credit there. Mm-hmm. I think they have a good squad. As you mentioned, being on the glass, I think, goes a long way, and especially in a drag it out, muddy game, you know, that could help them. So I'm taking them there. In the next matchup, though, Arkansas-Colgate, I'm taking Arkansas. I'm buying in on the Razorbacks. And, guys, I have Arkansas going to the Final Four.
I do, too.
I have Arkansas going to the Final Four.
Oh, boy. I do, too.
Yep. I like the fact that they can. They're number two in the nation in offense. Number two.
Yeah.
And I think if you get up against teams like Utah State, if they get them, or even Texas Tech, you get to the Sweet 16, the toughest matchup, I think, for them will be Ohio State, because I think Ohio State is, again, plays in what is the best conference in the country this year. I could see the Buckeyes winning that game, but I'm believing in the Razorbacks. And I think with Baylor and some of their defensive, you know, deficiencies in some of their flaws, I think Arkansas could expose them, and that's why I have them going to the Final Four.
They ripped my heart out of my Jerome bracket. I had Arkansas winning the SEC, so there's a little bit of a recency bias there.
Okay.
Where, you know what? I'm out on the Razorbacks.
You're holding the grudge now.
I am.
Coit was in Kansas earlier.
Yes.
Now you're okay.
Exactly.
Good.
Yeah. It happens. I get it.
Good.
I get it.
Let's go Colgate there on Friday.
Let's go Keegan Records.
I love
let's
it.
Go Keegan in that
Records.
One.
I love
exactly.
it.
Okay.
Love it.
A lot of people in South County will be watching that one.
Yep.
So I have Texas Tech beating Arkansas in the round of 32. And then let's start the conversation about the 7-10-2-15. I think Ohio State gets by Oral Roberts fairly easily. Another good matchup, 7-10. I like Virginia Tech. I like Mike Young there in that spot. And I have Ohio State winning a couple games and getting to the Elite Eight.
Well, I mean, Florida just isn't who they were supposed to be. You know, obviously, with that terrible incident with Keontae Johnson very early in the season, collapsing on the floor, I think that was at Florida State in that game. He was a preseason SEC Player of the Year and a surefire pro. For him to have a heart issue like he did, you know, thankfully he looks healthy now. He's obviously not playing, but he's been with the team throughout the season. Florida had so much more upside with someone like that in their lineup. You know, Florida Virginia Tech is the type of game where it's two Power Five teams. They're both very athletic. You know, I'm not really certain if they have much upside going forward into the field. You know, and certainly not with Ohio State on the other side. I see some long-term issues for Ohio State. They're 79th in defense. They only force turnovers 15% of the time. That's 336th. They're middling three-point shooting defense. They will beat Oral Roberts, who is the worst defense in the field in terms of efficiency. You know, I do have Ohio State losing to Arkansas. I just think that Arkansas and Colgate kind of do the same thing. Arkansas just does it a little better.
Mm-hmm.
Colgate hasn't necessarily played anyone who's a step up in class. They only played against the Patriot League this year. That was a decision that the conference made to try to keep the players safe and COVID-free, and I fully understand that. I have Arkansas in the Final Four. like Coit does. I think that Eric Musselman can really coach. He's got a one-and-done pro in Moses Moody, who could be a first-round pick, a scoring wing, you know, just a really talented kid. They play really fast and could be difficult to adjust to. I have them beating Purdue in the Elite Eight. You know, I think Purdue is just a really well-balanced team. Matt Painter is an excellent coach. Trevion Williams is the type of guy who can put a team on his back and run through the field. I also don't think that Purdue is going to have much trouble with either Winthrop or Villanova if they're able to get past North Texas. I think Villanova is diminished. I think they'd be more talented than Winthrop. And then if you subscribe to the theory like I do that Wisconsin or North Carolina can beat Baylor, that makes Purdue in the Sweet 16 a favorite. You know, so I would put Purdue against Arkansas in my Elite Eight there. I have Arkansas going to the Final Four. I think Eric Musselman breaks through pretty early here in his Razorbacks tenure in just his second year. And I think Arkansas is the type of team who could get back to where they were in the 90s under Nolan Richardson, a team that can play annually at or near the top of the SEC.
Yep, I'm with you. I have Baylor in the Elite Eight losing to Arkansas. That's probably the only difference I got there. And I liked what I saw from Ohio State, so I have them in the Sweet 16, you know, falling to Arkansas. But again, you know, I was impressed on a big stage the way that Washington handled himself. And, you know, they grinded it out against an Illinois team that, as I mentioned near the top of the podcast, I really, really like.
Yeah.
Me, at my Sweet 16, I have Baylor and Purdue and Texas Tech and Ohio State. And I have the 1 and 2 seeds advancing to the Elite Eight there with Chalk and Baylor going to the Final Four. Yeah, I mean, as much as I'm holding that grudge, Bill, you make an awfully good argument. And those are the same reasons why 2 weeks ago I picked Arkansas. You know, they had 1-8 straight to end the regular season to go to the SEC tournament and run right through there. So I might have to think on that one again before I put these in Sharpie. Right now they're just in pencil, but right now I like Baylor over Ohio State in the South Region Final.
Yeah, Baylor obviously has had a great year. They have great guards with Jared Butler and Macy O'Teague. You know, can really score it and get up and down. You know, if I'm going to stick to, you know, maybe the guiding principle of how I'm going to pick my bracket, it's going to be defense based. And you know, I see them as the weakest of the one seeds in that regard, but like anything else here, would not be surprised if they just decide to spite me and make a deep run and maybe win the national championship. I mean, why not? Go ahead, Scott Drew. Go crazy. certainly. The last region, the Midwest region, comes to my second national finalist. That is Illinois. Coit, I have the same final as you.
Mm-hmm.
Gonzaga against Illinois. The Illini are, I mean, just physically, if you watch them play over 40 minutes, that is not the type of game that you want to jump into if you're just some random pickup guy on the street. You know, I look at some teams playing the NCAA and I think back to, you know, like guys who I watch play in high school or at a lower level college, and I think, you know, this game would be fun to play in. You know, they get up and down, they don't really challenge you too hard physically. You know, their athletes aren't necessarily these off-the-charts guys who look like they're from Mars. You know, it would be okay to play in this game. Illinois is not your team, if that's what you're looking to do.
Yeah.
You know, Ayo Dosunmu looks like a guy who's going to be a first-round pick if he decides to come out. Kofi Coburn, physically, is the closest thing I've seen to Greg Oden in the college game in 15 years. He is just a mountain of a man. Mm-hmm. Inside. 7-footer, 280 pounds, muscles on top of muscles. Good luck going in the paint against him. And your third option is a guy named Andre Curbelo, who's really stepped forward. New York City kid.
Swagger.
Super player.
Swagger.
You know, just really has confidence, you know, just dripping off him.
Well, and don't discount, too, when they go to the bench and put Coburn on the bench, they go to Georgie. I'm not going to try to say his last name, but we'll just call him Georgie. That kid can make an impact. He made an impact in that title game yesterday. That was impressive. So the squad itself, you know, you've got two great players, but everybody behind them, you know, can really contribute. Even the kid Williams, too. I mean, that just... at every spot, I think they're solid.
Williams on Illinois, really? Wow, love it. They've got some similarities of that team that made the run, you know, 15 years ago to the national championship game. So yeah. I think there are a lot of reasons why Illinois should be a favorite in the Midwest, and I have them getting the national championship game as well, like both of you guys.
Yeah, Georgie Bensanashvili.
There you go. He's good at this. I don't know why he's good at this.
Is that Sandro's cousin?
I was going to say.
Do we know? Is that confirmed?
You just go to the media notes.
Yeah.
You just go to the media notes. They have pronunciations in there.
Sure.
Illinois 14-1 in their last 15 games, and you mentioned Damonte Williams. I think it's important when you have guys like Damonte Williams and Trent Frazier in your program to 2 4-year players, two guys you recruited initially, two culture guys to back up the underclassmen like DeSumo, like Coburn, like Curbelo. The guy stirring the drink at Illinois is Brad Underwood, and I think that we should go into Brad Underwood a little bit just quickly. The fact that Brad Underwood killed everybody at Stephen F. Austin. Dominated the Southland while he was there. Spent 1 year at Oklahoma State. He was on the lowest salary in the Big 12. Went 20-13 at a program that was really struggling at the time. And for whatever reason, Oklahoma State in the original contract didn't have a strong buyout provision, didn't have a big salary bump planned for Brad Underwood. Illinois swooped in, hired him away from the Cowboys after 1 year. And look what he's doing now in Champaign. Mm-hmm. I mean, Oklahoma State has risen now. They're in the field. We'll get to them later here in this Midwest region. But Brad Underwood can coach. If you can win like he won at Stephen F. Austin, and you can do the things that he's doing at this point, Brad Underwood can really, really coach. I'm not surprised that he has this going the way he does at Illinois. I think that they are outstanding. I wish that they weren't playing Drexel in this game. Drexel's a great story out of the CAA, probably the most likely Philly team to make an NCAA tournament. They're coached by Zach Spiker, who was at Army before that. He's in his fifth year at Drexel. It's his first time over 500 with the Dragons. That's a really tough job. So for them to get through the CAA, get a 16 seed, you figured they'd be towards the bottom of the field. You would have liked if they could have drawn someone a little nicer, a little more cuddly than Illinois. Because really, they just have no chance in this game.
I did not expect you to use the word cuddly on this podcast today.
But round of applause to Drexel.
Sure.
For breaking through in the CAA. They are a great story. The 8-9 game there, Loyola and Georgia Tech, this is a game that... Maury alluded to Georgia Tech's seeding earlier. Loyola is another team that a lot of folks would look and say that they are badly underseeded. They're 9 overall in KenPom, and yet they're an 8 seed. The top 8 teams in KenPom, the top 4 are the 1 seeds, the next 4 are the 2 seeds. What happened at 9? What happened with Loyola?
Yeah.
We're going to see if the on-court and the sort of the eye test meshes with the math here. We're going to see what Loyola can do. They were in the Final Four when these seniors were freshmen. Cameron Krutwig was there. Lucas Williamson was there. God bless her sister Jean was there, and is still here.
Too.
Yep. Looking at Loyola, the number one defense in the country, 3rd in defensive rebounding, 8th in free throws against, which means they defend but don't foul. Porter Moser is an excellent coach. They're an old team. I could see Loyola winning this game against Georgia Tech, who is a fascinating story. Going to the ACC championship game, they have the ACC player of the year in Moses Wright. As we mentioned earlier, they have Jose Alvarado, who is a Brooklyn kid. He is all heart. They're one of the oldest teams in the nation, 2.54 years of experience. That's 4th nationally. Josh Pastner looks like a renegade chemistry teacher on the sidelines with that face shield and that sort of maniacal grin that he's got going. Another game right behind North Carolina and Wisconsin for me. This is the second 8-9 game in terms of interest for me. I think it's fascinating.
There's no one happier on planet Earth than Josh Pastner. He is a poodle turned human turned head coach. His voicemail is awesome. I don't know if anyone out there heard it during the ACC championship game. I'm sure there's clippings on YouTube. Just a guy that lives life to the fullest, has a smile on his face, super encouraging. And look where it's landed Georgia Tech. It's landed them as the ACC champ. And then just getting a brutal draw as a 9 seed facing one of the better defensive experienced teams in the country, much like Bill was saying about Brad Underwood at Illinois. Porter Moser, really good coach at Loyola Chicago. And they still have some lingering pieces from the 2018 team that went to the Final Four. So when you're looking at the bracket, I have Illinois, like I said. I actually like Loyola Chicago here in a – I guess it's chalk when you're looking at the seeds. I still consider it as an upset when you're beating an ACC champion.
Sure.
I think Illinois Loyola Chicago would just be an awesome game for all Chicago supremacy and Illinois supremacy there between those two. And a little bit down the line, you know, Tennessee Oregon State I think is an intriguing matchup, as is Oklahoma State Liberty. But again, like I've stayed consistent on this show and in my beliefs, I think when you have the best player on the court at all times, you know, Cade Cunningham might be the best player of any of the 68 teams that are participating in this beloved tournament. So I have Oklahoma State there over Liberty. I have Tennessee over Oregon State. I think Bill, what you were saying about Georgetown, I think the run comes to an end for the Beavers there as the 12 seed. And I have Tennessee over Oklahoma State. So that's the top part of my Midwest region. I have Illinois over Tennessee to go to the Elite Eight.
I like Georgia Tech in that game. I know you guys are romanticizing about the Loyola-Chicago-Illinois matchup. I like what Tech did late in the season, so I'm taking them in that matchup. These matchups actually disappoint me a little bit because I would love to see Tech somewhere else in the bracket because I think they could make some noise.
Yeah.
I would love to see like an Oklahoma State somewhere else in the bracket because I think they would make some noise. I just like Illinois so much that anybody, when they start advancing, uh-oh, here are the Illini. Sorry, you're going home. Take care. Take care, Georgia Tech. Pastner, bring your boys home. Take care, Cade Cunningham. See you later. You know, nice Sweet 16 appearance, but I just like Illinois so much. I'm taking the 12-5. I like what Oregon State has done late in the season as well. A lot of my picks have been sort of trends in how teams are peaking late in the year. That's a nod to our friend Kate Rogerson, who's out there in Oregon and was covering
right.
the Beavers out there. So
that's right.
I take Oregon State there, but I'm with you. Cade Cunningham is a tremendous player, so that's why I have Oklahoma State in the Sweet 16 going up against the Illini, and you know where it goes from there in that top half.
We also got to give a shout-out to Nicky Latarullo, who's covering Baylor.
Baylor, that's
down in Texas.
Yep.
You know, Nicky could have herself a national champion, end up in a Final Four, which would be amazing for her career so early on, you know, to be able to, you know, obviously she's been covering the Baylor men and the Baylor women. You know, talk about the highest levels of college basketball that you step right into. It's fantastic. I got a little anarchy in this point in the Midwest region. You know, I like Illinois going forward, and because of that, because I see Illinois winning in the Sweet 16 and winning in the Elite Eight, I have Oregon State beating Tennessee. I don't like the fact that Tennessee's probably going to play without John Fulkerson. He's a forward who sustained a facial fracture in the SEC tournament. He got elbowed by a Florida player, Omar Payne. He's questionable in that game. Tennessee at times struggles to score it. Oregon State, I'm not the biggest fan of teams that win the conference tournament in terms of momentum, in terms of overachieving. I said that with Georgetown earlier. But I do think that Tennessee is a little bit diminished and could get picked off here. Oklahoma State and Liberty, I think, is going to be a fascinating game. You know, for me, Oklahoma State has the number one pick in the draft, Cade Cunningham, obviously. You know, really, really talented team. They've won 8 of their last 10. 22nd in defense nationally. Couple things worry me about the Cowboys. They're 298th in turnover percentage, 324th in experience. So they give the ball away, and they're young. If they get into a little bit of a hole against a team like Liberty, who's won 12 in a row, who can really shoot it from 3 and from 2, they're a top 10 shooting team in both, 20th in free throw shooting. 41% of their points are from 3. They have three guys who shoot it at 40% or better. I'm taking Liberty in the upset there against Oklahoma State. You know, I feel like it's a good shot to take at that point in the bracket because I have Illinois advancing so deep. I actually have Liberty going to the Sweet 16 and playing against Illinois. You know, I think Oregon State's run ends in the round of 32. I think Liberty is the type of sort of mid-major, lower conference team who's done a lot of winning in the last two or three years, who's played in an NCAA tournament. You know, I feel like they're the type of team that profiles as somebody who can be a double-digit seed and make a Sweet 16.
Oh, baby. I like it, BK.
Spicy.
Woo!
I'm in for it.
Yeah. Why not? I'm with the best player, you know, in that part of the bracket with Cade Cunningham. That's why I have them moving on. But, hey, you make good points, Bill. You make good points. So I like it. Taking a shot.
Maury, give us San Diego, Syracuse.
Oh, my God.
We know you've been waiting for this
one. Here it is. Well, my head says San Diego State. Really good team. I've seen him in parts of games this year. Haven't seen him in full. Listening to Jim Boeheim's comments last night, I think they're 53-6 in the last 2 years. They've won 53 out of their last 59 games.
Yeah.
Experienced team. And the worst part about it, as good as the zone has been the last couple weeks for Syracuse, and they've gotten a lot better defensively, San Diego State, one of the better three-point shooting teams in the country, shooting it at just about 38% as a team, which is phenomenal. I think they have a guy in the high 40s or mid-40s, and they have a couple potential draftable guys, San Diego State does. So I'm going with Syracuse because I think the 2-3 zone is a little different. As everybody says, you know, this time of year, it's hard to prepare for it. And I think Buddy Boeheim's playing phenomenal. But my heart says Syracuse. My head goes San Diego State. I go Syracuse there. And then I have West Virginia to the Sweet 16 out of that little 14 pod.
This is where I'm taking my shot. I'm going San Diego State to the Elite Eight.
Okay.
Yep.
I'm taking them over Syracuse. Take them over West Virginia. I have Houston going to the Sweet 16. I think they're just a heck of a team. But I think the motivation of San Diego State, I know they lost a little bit from last season when they would have been one of the top four seeds, I believe, in a bracket if the tournament had happened last year.
No one got hurt worse than San Diego State and Dayton. It seemed like they both had lightning in a bottle.
Yep, 100%. But I think they still have a lot from last season. And so I think the guys that are left over are super motivated to make some sort of run because they know they were robbed of it last year. And as Maury mentioned, you know, the three-point shooting, you know, I think they can get hot, win a couple of games here. And I don't mind taking a shot with them in this part of the bracket because of Illinois and because I have the Illini in the Final Four in the national championship game.
Yeah, I'm looking at the bottom half there. I do have San Diego State going to my Sweet 16. I think West Virginia is a tick down defensively from who they typically are.
Yeah.
Under Bob Huggins, I think San Diego State will find a way to execute against them. They've been in enough high-level games over the last couple of years. They've had that exposure. Clemson and Rutgers, two power conference teams like Virginia Tech and Florida, this game doesn't do a lot for me. You know, I'm picking Clemson to win. You know, I like Houston going through in the bottom half there. I like Houston getting to the Elite Eight and losing to Illinois. You know, I'm willing to sort of just be chalky there because I'm not necessarily as enthralled with those games. You know, Clemson, Rutgers, and Houston, Cleveland State. You know, neither one really gets me too excited. You know, so I'm looking at Illinois and Houston in my Elite Eight there. Houston and San Diego State in the Sweet 16. I have Illinois to the Final Four, beating Arkansas on that side of the bracket. That could be a really good game.
Yeah.
I think Gonzaga and Florida State, for me, would maybe be the less dramatic of the two. But I think Illinois and Arkansas, if it breaks for me in the Final Four, would be a really good game.
Yep, that's what I've got, too. I would love that matchup. I've got Illinois over Arkansas in the Final Four, and I've got Gonzaga over Texas in the Final Four. And then the national championship game, as we agreed upon, Gonzaga and Illinois. And my score pick for the for Gonzaga.
Oh, tiebreaker.
73-69. I think it's going to be close. I know Gonzaga can run away with games, but I think Illinois is too good of a team to let that thing get too out of hand. And I think ultimately it's a four-point game. They maybe hit a free throw to ice it toward the end of it, and There's your national champ, undefeated. First time since Bob Knight, 1976.
Yep.
And I have Illinois over Baylor in the Final Four. Houston, yes, out of the bottom part of the Midwest. I have Rutgers over Clemson there, and that's 7-10. But I have Illinois over Baylor in the Final Four, Gonzaga over Florida State, and then I have Gonzaga over Illinois. 73-69. Yeah, I think it might be a little bit more high scoring than that. The total might be. I think Gonzaga might score closer to 80.
Sure.
Or in the low 80s. But yeah, I think Gonzaga. I mean, just too good. Too good. I mean, you know a lot. You look at the records. It doesn't really matter. I mean, you got to go Gonzaga here. And then what? Like Bill likes to say, that means they're not going to win at all.
Yeah, there's no chance that Gonzaga will play Illinois. There's no chance that either team will make the Final Four. I have Gonzaga beating Illinois 85-78. I do see scoring in that game. Couple more pieces of news to wrap up the podcast. Richard Pitino is out at Minnesota. Boston College is going to hire Charleston coach Earl Grant. Big surprise that they have passed over Mark Schmidt yet again. Great news for the Bonnies fans out there. And you wonder what Schmidt's next move might be. You wonder if Schmidt might have said no behind the scenes. A quiet no to his alma mater to spare them, potentially what could have been an embarrassment if they had been turned down publicly. We'll get into that a little bit more on the next edition of the podcast. Folks, enjoy the games. Enjoy the brackets. It's great to have them back after a one-year absence. I want to thank my two co-conspirators for coming in for a three-man weave, and hopefully we can do this again a little deeper in the tournament. Thank you all very much.